Hey everyone, it's Dario Kristen with AfterBuzz TV. Did you know that TrueCar.com is changing car buying experiences forever? Yes, everyday TrueCar users receive negotiation-free guaranteed savings. Although, some features are not available in all states. But it's okay. In the first 3 months of this year, over 126,000 cars were sold by the TrueCar Certified Dealer Network. TrueCar users save an average of $3,078 off of MSRP. When you're ready to buy a car, just follow these easy steps. It's just three of them. First, you go to TrueCar.com and find out what other people pay for the car you're looking for. Then register at TrueCar.com to see upfront pricing information and lock in your savings. The third step is so simple. Just print out your true savings certificate and take it to the TrueCar certified dealer for a better, hassle-free car buying experience overall. Remember, everyday TrueCar users receive negotiation-free guaranteed savings. Save time, save your money, and never overpay. Visit TrueCar.com today. That's TrueCar.com.
You're listening to the AfterBuzz TV Network, now the largest new media platform on the web and your number one source for after-show entertainment. From the AfterBuzz Studios in Los Angeles, California, presented by Maria Menounos and Bing.com, and streaming live thanks to Akamai Technologies, this is AfterBuzz TV's The Strain After Show. We'll break down tonight's episode and get you all the latest news and gossip. And now, another post-game wrap-up show for your favorite TV show. It's AfterBuzz TV's The Strain.
Hey there, Strain fans, what's going on? Oh yeah, we're talking about Strain Season 1, Episode 3, Gone Smooth. That's why we're jamming out to Smooth by Santana. I'm Matt Lieberman. Joining me as always, fantastic panels here. Stephen Lemieux is here.
Hey guys, great to be here after this episode, loved it.
Yes, Zach Wilson's here.
Hey guys, thanks for joining us.
And Jackie Borowski's here.
Holla, holla.
Yeah. Another awesome episode of The Strain, which I'm really, really excited to say. We finally... I was really concerned that our intrepid heroes would be in the dark, not forever, but for like so long that we get bored or it would be
Absolutely.
Laughable, you know, because like enough people were like, how could they have ignored Abraham and the pilot? But they finally come to face with a vampire, which is dope, and he had to beat his face in. We're going to break it all down for you. We also have a wonderful guest this evening.
Come on in about 3 or 4 minutes.
Yes, Nikolai Witchy, I believe is
Witchell,
who plays Ansel on the show, who we finally really got to meet this week.
Meet his wife Anne Marie, which I'm sorry, call her Anne or call her Marie.
But her name is Anne Marie.
You're from the South. You should know that people do that to their
yeah.
name.
Hyphenated.
It bothered
Anne
me.
Anne Marie. That's her name.
Me.
Don't you have cousins named things like that?
Should I call you Stee?
Yeah. Should I call you
I prefer Fen.
How did you enjoy this episode?
I loved it. Thank you, Matt.
Yeah, you're welcome,
While we wait for him to call in, I want you guys to live tweet us during the after show. Tweet Matt Lieberman at...
Yeah, tweet me at Matt Lieberman. That's MattLieberman.
Tweet me at Stephen Lemieux, StephenLemieux.
And you can tweet me, Zach Wilson, at that Zach Wilson. That's Zach with a CH. Spelled correctly, not this Zach on the show.
I'm at 123 Jackie B, Jackie underscore B, and Jackie is JACQUE.
Woo!
We got some great comments on YouTube and iTunes, by the way.
It's really fantastic.
I'm loving it. We have so many comments on iTunes, and we just started.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
Well, here, while
you guys are great.
While we're waiting for Nikolai to call, let's talk about Gabe real quick. So, Gabe Bolivar, our rocker, whose penis fell in the toilet and he didn't care one bit.
Can I just say that, okay, having read the books, I knew that he was going to not have a penis in this episode. And it was just a matter of how they show it, how they do it. And the best part is actually watching it with you guys, because me, I know it's coming, but you guys, hearing the, holy crap, what the, oh my god. It's so much fun to hear you guys say
that. Well, it's just how little he cared. His penis fell off and it didn't bother him.
It kind of just slid off. It was like,
usually when something plops in the toilet, it's a relieving,
it's not your penis
with it. But like, I would think there would be more panic.
Yeah.
You know, I kind of was...
That's how vampiric he is. That's how under the strain he is.
It felt like
he's under a great deal of strain.
Like, literally, watching this entire scene, like, I was tweeting out every 30 seconds with just random puns and jokes, because I'm just like, look, dude, if you're worried about your eyes when your dick is probably like a three-pong tentacle by now, you need to get your priorities straight.
And then
I also said that I hope he doesn't have a rapping career like Andre Johnson after he chopped off his penis.
We saw last week, like, he was already having some, like, performance issues.
Right.
So he wasn't using it.
That's true.
If you don't use it, you lose it.
But after the plane thing and him biting that girl, his album sales have, like, gone up 10 times. 10 times is big. The video's got 2 million hits on YouTube. That's the one thing that I can't stand. Like, even as somebody who, like, is on YouTube and, like, we're the show on YouTube, is like YouTube is now a plot point. Like, YouTube hits are a plot point in TV shows.
Gawker was a plot point. I want to want my penis to wind up on Gawker.
Right.
But that's because we have flies in the studio.
There are two flies.
It's in your hair, Matt.
Two flies. Don't bother me.
Matt, you're,
oh my God.
You're too fly for this studio right now.
Stop it.
But I think that makes it relevant, you know, by mentioning things like YouTube and Gawker.
But it's just, it will never not be weird. Or maybe it will be not weird eventually.
It's honest. But it's probably the same thing, like, older generations have felt about
but
television.
As long as we don't get, like, the, oh my God, is something happening in Brooklyn? Let me check Twitter. Like, I don't want that. Like, oh, the vampire.
I want that. Right. I want there to be a Twitter, like, update feed about, like, oh, there's a vampire guy running down the street and biting people.
You know, that would be how we do it.
Our caller.
Yes. Nikolai, I believe, is on the line. Are you with us?
Hello, yes.
Hi.
Yes, hi. Nice to have you
welcome,
on the show.
Welcome.
Thank you for being here.
Pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Yeah. So, Ansel, this week we really got to get to know him. He got real personal with a side of beef. And
absolutely.
Yeah.
Delicious.
Yeah. So, tell us about what Ansel's going through right now. So, like, how he's aware that something's wrong. But at the same time, when he's drinking that blood, he doesn't seem bothered by his wife catching him. Like, where is he psychologically?
Psychologically, I think Ansel's in a really interesting place.
Mm-hmm.
And he's also in a really interesting place just because of the nature of the strain and the virus and the worms itself and the kind of control that it has.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, obviously, he knows that something's wrong because he feels like death. But I think as a character, he's come from a place where he always, he deals with a lot of problems because his wife has a lot of problems. I told my co-star, Alex Paxton Beasley, that Ansel's nickname for her is My Lady of Infinite Tragedy.
Ugh.
Because she's always dealing with so many things and, they actually cut this line, but it's referenced that Anne-Marie survived the attacks on 9/11. So
she's
basically been PTSD for about a dozen years through a couple of kids.
Yeah,
they mentioned that she was just like watching the attacks afterwards.
Yeah, so watching the towers coming down.
Forced to watch the fallout again and again and again.
Yeah, and that really... ruined her sense of security, and Ansel's just kind of been the security blanket over her for so many years, and this is just another problem for him that he's pushing to the back of his head. But there's also something else. There's also the virus itself and what it does to people mentally and some of the maybe control that the master still has that's maybe making these things less apparent and less important for him.
So, Nikolai, what kind of backstory did they give your character beforehand when you are playing a character that doesn't get as much screen time as some of the main characters, but has to make such a rapid change in how you act and how you're perceived in the show?
He's more. I mean, let
most
me.
Of
I'm
that s- was,
oh, sorry.
Sorry, go on.
Oh, I don't mean to cut you off, but Steve, he's a bigger character in the books, so I think he has more things to come.
Well, no,
which I just wanted to clarify.
I meant from the change now to when you first meet him and he's very reserved and you, like, as an actor, you're making a gigantic change from just even the first episode till now.
Right.
So when you have so little of your original character there, how do you create such a rich backstory so you know where to move forward and where you're coming from with the character?
Well, yeah. As said, a lot of it comes from the books, and I read them beforehand, and I read the scenes that the books are really good at fleshing out a lot of the details in the head of, mm-hmm. of the people, but there's actually some really interesting scenes that they add just for the series that help to flesh that out as well. But mostly it's about coming up with the backstory for you, for your character that you feel is true and an accurate representation that'll take you through those snippets that the audience mm-hmm. just gets to see.
Can you give us an example of a scene that they added specifically for the series that stood out to you that wasn't in the book?
The meat scene, actually.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
That scene wasn't in the book. And because a lot of it is just so visual, because mm-hmm. you get to see him doing the action and then his wife's reaction to it, that I really liked. I really enjoyed filming that bit.
Yeah, what were they having you drink?
Not real blood.
Crafty didn't have a blood tent set up?
They love their realism in this show. But it was kind of a cranberry blend.
Oh.
I can still taste it in my nasal cavities, actually.
Aww.
Oh, man. Well, so you kind of had this, like, CGI tongue coming out of your mouth.
Mm-hmm.
So you were just drinking normally? You didn't have, like, blue lips or anything, like, so that they could paint it onto you?
And that's not your real tongue, correct? That isn't?
That is not my real tongue.
Okay.
Was not cast based on that, thankfully.
Yeah.
Pretty heavy plastic surgery for a role.
Exactly. And I would have been willing to do it, obviously. But fortunately, they had the budget to add it in post.
Yeah. Would it be... go ahead.
They did, however, they were very heavy on makeup and practicals. And I remember just walking on set and having everyone look at me, particularly in the scenes involving blood. And I just really felt like the prettiest girl at the dance. It was really nice.
Awesome. Now, would it be giving anything away to ask you how many episodes you're in this season?
Oh, that's...
No, you can find that out via IMDb, and I am in 5 episodes.
Okay, thank you. See, Steven, you got worried over nothing.
No, but that's always like people view that as a spoiler, as if like how many episodes people are in. People hate that. I don't know.
Well, and this again is this, we walk this fine line here on this show between fans who have read the books and fans who have just solely seen the series. And I want to ask, because I'm the only one on this panel that has read the books, and you've obviously read the books too, which I think is awesome. It's very, you can see it as a person who's read the books. You can see that you have read the books watching your character, because you kind of imagine, you're like, oh, that is how I saw that guy.
You've got that inner life.
Yeah, you've got that inner life going on. So,
book stuff, earmuffs, people.
Is there any, this is book stuff, but is there anything, you can maybe say about your scenes coming up or anything about how you felt without obviously giving too much away? Because you go...
Without giving too much away, I really tried to build my relationship with Gertie, my dog.
Mm-hmm.
Because that was really important for playing some of the scenes coming up.
To come, yeah.
Just making sure... The dog's real name is Dante, which was awesome. And I made fast friends with him, and I always tried to play with him as much as possible, just as kind of a way of saying I'm sorry, I guess.
Yeah. So what was the audition process like? When was that? When was your strange journey starting?
My journey started a little bit over a year ago.
Okay.
The strain was actually, I'm fairly new to the world of doing film, actually. I've done a lot of theater work before, but The Strain was the second professional gig that I auditioned for and the third gig that I've ever done.
Wow.
For
nice.
A professional film. So it was a self-tape. I'm from Vancouver originally. Edmonton originally, but I live in Vancouver.
Mm-hmm.
So my agent and I did a self-tape, and we sent that away, and then we waited for a month and a half, and they got back, and they asked how old I was, and I'm 28. And I know that the character was in the book originally written in his 40s, so I was like, eh, maybe not. And then a week later, they said that I got it. They accepted me.
Well, you've got, like, these amazing angles to your face that I'm like, oh, man, yeah, he's a vampire. Sorry.
What's the kind of vibe on set when you're filming a show like this? Because I know Guillermo's very specific with how he wants things done, how he wants it to look, but I feel like a lot of shows that we're a big fan of, like we're a big fan of Helix, which is also shot up there, and a lot of other shows are being shot up there, like Orphan Black. What is it kind of like a fun vibe on set when you guys aren't in process of filming a scene?
Yeah, it was fun. I always try to talk to the cast. And the rest of the crew as well. And there was a really good energy. It was kind of like everyone was really excited to be working on a show where they were like, this is going to be great. There's kind of no way around it. This is going to be pretty awesome. And we all felt really privileged to be a part of it, myself especially.
Sure.
Do you have any funny stories from set or one like your favorite story from set that you could tell us or no?
Yeah, I do have one. My favorite story from set is about my last day. No spoilers, because it has nothing to do with the content of it. But on my last day, I managed to work with the directoriest director I've ever been directed by.
Oh.
It was crazy. I'll tell you what he was wearing. He had on an Armani suit and a black beret. And little round tinted glasses.
Stop.
Oh my, no, this is too much.
Absolutely.
Oh my gosh.
And halfway through the day, he took out his trumpet and he played for 5 minutes while they were changing over cameras.
Oh my god. This,
whoa.
What? I can't even.
Are you allowed to know who it was or no?
It was crazy. But I didn't figure out the punchline until I got back to Vancouver, which is that this director, he's also an actor named Peter Weller. He's probably best well known for playing RoboCop in the movie RoboCop.
That was Peter Weller. Peter Weller played the trumpet between takes and was wearing a beret while directing. No way.
I wasn't there for all of his days, so he probably didn't dress like that every day.
That's so
the day
funny.
I worked with him, he certainly did.
Because I've watched a lot of his TV work because he directs a lot for FX, and I'm like, I've always liked when he directed. That's such a hilarious image. No way.
It was great. It was really fascinating, and I had a great time working with him, of course, but. That is not how I expect RoboCop to direct me.
That's not how anyone expects RoboCop.
That's the best.
Better have been a set photographer working that day.
Yeah.
Oh my god!
Black and white photo of the director chair.
Do you have? What was your favorite scene that you shot this season? Can you like tell us in like broad strokes? Yeah, or even just what episode?
My favorite
scene
that I shot is coming up next episode.
Okay.
I think it's the beginning of next episode. I do some really cool stuff with my wife, who, as I said, Alex Paxton Beasley, who is fantastic to work with, such a professional.
Wonderful. All right, so we'll be on the lookout.
I have a quick question. How much, as far as, you know, you look in the mirror and there's obviously a change. All of the vampire characters are going through a change, and you have, like, red eyes, and you have these crazy vampire teeth. How much is it special effects makeup, and how much is CGI?
I'm not sure exactly, because I haven't seen this recent episode. I just got out of doing an improv show, actually.
Oh, nice!
I do improv.
Yeah, but I assume that pretty much all of it is going to be practical effects. I know they were very heavy on practical effects, and it's only the things like the tongue that they probably want CG for. But even then, maybe not all of the scenes have a CG tongue, because I know the props and the prosthetics guys were really excited about working on this project, and they made a lot of stuff, some of which I don't think necessarily made it to camera, but was just grist for the mill of this fantastic show that's just a labor of love.
Absolutely. Nice. All right. Is there anything else that you're working on at present that you want to let people know about?
Nothing right now, really. Just some improv in Vancouver.
Okay.
I'm part of two companies, Instant Theater and Sin Peaks, a weekly improvised soap opera.
Nice.
Wonderful.
I'm excited to see what my next project is coming up.
Great. Do you have a Twitter or anywhere online that people can find you?
Not necessarily, Facebook, but that's for me, guys.
Fair enough. All right. Nikolai, I want to thank you so much for joining us tonight. We have to move on, but it was a pleasure talking
thank
to you.
Thank you so much.
Thanks for calling in.
Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. Again, have a good night. All right. Such a nice guy.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
And lots of great tidbits. I'll never
awesome.
Get that,
that
Peter
story, Weller. That was the best.
So funny.
That made my night.
Yeah. Exclusive.
Yeah. Ansel, he's going through some changes.
I like that he mentioned the dog, though, because we do get the scene where the dog is barking at him.
Yeah.
And his teeth. And I love the Bram Stoker teeth coming out. Mm-hmm. And I'm really enjoying the transformation, how it's looking so far.
Love it.
They really do look like Nosferatu when you think like old school vampires, where it's like bald and they're kind of like pallid looking.
Yeah, and the ears.
Ichor's looks like Voldemort to me.
Well, he's got the, you said,
the bat nose.
Bat-like nose.
That upturned, like inverted.
He has no nose.
Yeah. Well, no, it's the same nose.
It's nose holes.
It's like a bat would have
a bat nose if it was flat. Yeah, the slits. But you know what was really interesting? Somebody posted on our YouTube video for the first episode a few days ago was that under UV light, there's the back guano thing is like mostly ammonia because that's what their body converts blood into. Vampire bats convert blood into ammonia in their excrement, and it shows up under black light. So basically that was completely just like, I mean, it's disgusting to think that Dracula's walking around covered in his own feces, but like that's kind of
they're like shitting while they feed, basically.
You didn't need to use that word, but yeah.
No. They shit while they feed.
But so that's, I mean, it's something that I think I love as we're building this show and building like the mythology and the biology behind these vampires is they're taking all the mythology that we know and giving us a realistic, almost realistic version of it. Like why we think vampires turn into bats because they're very, very bat-like.
Yeah.
Maybe the virus even has, maybe the strain has a bat origin.
I like this idea, and we're going to talk more about Eichhorst in a moment. But first, we got to talk about iTunes. We can't leave it alone. You thought I was going to forget, did you? Well, you were wrong. Or, you know, maybe you didn't. Maybe you were expecting it.
Eichhorst likes iTunes.
Eichhorst likes iTunes.
I want Steve to talk in a German accent the whole episode.
I would love to do that.
Oh, yeah?
Go to the iTunes and give the writing and the review of the show so that you may help us get the sponsors and the many guests like the Nikolai is on the show. But in any case, it is actually... It's very important, and it really helps us out. It's great to have your support. We've gotten a lot of great reviews from people. We're sitting at 26 five-star reviews right now. That's or 24 five-star reviews and 2 four-star reviews. In any case, we said we wanted how many? 60?
We want 50.
50 by episode 6?
I think that was what
50 by episode 6. So we're episode 3 right now. We're about halfway there.
We're more than halfway
More than halfway there. So keep us going. Let's keep this train a-rolling, people. And not only do you help us out, you get a nice shout-out on the show.
Yes. So, within the last week, what was the date of our last
episode? The last show was on the 20th.
The 20th. So, we have about 10 new comments. Wow, this is going to take like 2 minutes, guys.
That's all right.
Eric 464, I have to admit, I wasn't going to watch this train at all. Not another vampire show on TV, but I came across this podcast on YouTube, and I thought, I should listen to this because it's the host on the AfterBuzz shows, the Matt, the Jackie, the Steven, and the Zark. I am thoroughly entertained by the AfterShow show. Thank you for the 5 stars. Katze's Nit! You guys are great. Love how well you guys get along and talk about everything. You can tell you really love what you do. All right, I'm going to stop that because it's going to get annoying.
It's good. Just, all right, I need this podcast. With respect. Yeah.
Tis Neo, I need this podcast. Watch the Fruit Juice episodes before finding this podcast. I was hooked. And saying that, without this podcast, I would have no idea that this was a Dracula story.
That's pretty dope.
A very interesting take on watching this show without knowing that.
Because you could totally, from the posters, you wouldn't know the difference. You would just think it's a horror show.
Yeah.
That's what's good. I like that we can have a show that is like that kind of vampire lore without, I would put money on they never drop the V word.
Yeah, I like that.
I hope not. Ronnie5C, I started watching the stream because this after show, it helps clarify the show. Thanks for the great work. Keep the Lights On by Brown Pride 209. Love the team going over the show. They're also doing great on Sleepy Hollow as well, except for Zach because he's not on it.
That's not what he said. He added that. Steven's just being naughty.
Blink 16,226. Great cast and show. Best panel by JB97.9. This is the best panel at the Episode Network. Aww. Fun to listen. Thanks. Thank you very much, JB. And Hank09, of course, the hashtag strain just housed on AfterBuzz TV, and funny. I love him. You have a long comment. Thank you, though, Hank. But follow Hank at Masters Minions on Twitter because he helps support the show, and he has his own little thing going on.
And read his strain reviews, I believe, for TV Fanatic. He's a really nice guy. He's a friend of the show. So, keep up with him.
All right, guys.
Along the lines of that, though, they just did the Comic-Con panel for The Strain this afternoon, I think.
Yeah.
So I've tweeted some of the highlights from the Comic-Con panel. Hank has, too. So if you want to check those out, they're on Twitter.
Yeah. Sweet.
Yeah. So let's talk about I-Course. We get this great opening sequence where he puts on his face. And we see he's like full Nosferatu. Yeah. And I love his line, like, soon the charade will be over.
I have a question. Oh.
No, I was going to say that I really wish I Feel Pretty was playing during this scene.
Well, they're saving the budget for effects and stuff. For snake tongues.
But I have a question. Is that we established in an earlier episode that he doesn't breathe.
Yeah.
But when he takes off his nose...
The nostrils are flaring
as if he's breathing.
Mm-hmm.
Is that just like him twitching? Or... Because he also wouldn't need a nose. I guess smells.
Maybe he's just throbbing.
Yeah. Or
maybe that actor has a hard time holding his breath.
Or, I mean, think about it this way. Bats are blind. They see through echolocation or through radar, whatever. Mm-hmm. The nose could very much be a part of that system for these vampires.
I guess smells and tastes have to go through the nose.
Or he's sitting down in front of a makeup table and he could just be sensitive to light. And, like, I know, like, when I step into direct sunlight, my nose twitches. Like, sometimes I'll sneeze. I'll sneeze when I just step into sunlight.
Steven, move away.
Yeah.
Move away.
But that's just a thing that people have. Some people are allergic to sunlight and will just sneeze when they step into the sun.
Before Matt confesses to being a vampire... So he puts on his neck, he chooses his ears very carefully, he puts on his teeth and everything.
Does he have multiple ears? Did he have two sets of ears?
I think he did.
You know, sometimes he wants
happy ears and sad ears.
He's actually the High Council Elrond.
Oh, jeez.
But no, so maybe he's one day he's like a corgi. He's got one up and one down.
When he meets with Sean Astin, he likes to wear the elf ears to mess with him. But no, I love this scene because I didn't know... Because you don't know it's him at first. Like, you don't know. I mean, you have a feeling that it's either him or you think it's the master at the beginning. And then as he's putting more and more on his makeup and I'm humming to myself, I Feel Pretty, it just comes together and you're just, what the F?
Well, it's also because we didn't know. We knew that they were bald, but we didn't know exactly. We knew there was something wrong because he was too human looking.
Mm-hmm.
So we're waiting for that moment, that reveal that's like, this is what this dude really looks like.
Mm-hmm.
We're wondering what's going on with his neck, though, because he's got
he's got the big flaps. Big flaps. And I assume it's in the same place where everyone else was kind of stabbed and was the little one. You know, like everybody else has like a little slit in their neck, and now he has a big slit. So maybe over time, you were saying that maybe the parasite inside of him, because that's the thing, the parasite is causing their entire body to grow new organs. So if the tongue thing, what if it eventually gets too big to fit through the mouth without damaging it, and it opens up a throat hole to slide through?
Apparently that's not true, though.
Apparently, not.
Unless they're doing that with the video, though. Because I have seen pictures from this show that's...
The show is changing things from the book.
Okay. Another interesting idea would be is that Abraham had cut him with his silver sword there, and it's just never fully healed.
Ooh, I like that.
Yes, that's I do like dope. That.
Yeah, that's why he has to wear a fake neck.
You guys want to know a fun fact from Comic-Con?
Fun fact from Comic-Con
is that Guillermo del Toro got the idea of the worms.
Mm-hmm.
His wife is a vet, and she was studying worms in heartworms and dogs.
I'm already horrified.
She was studying heartworms and dogs, and so he got the idea for parasites for this show from from that.
Oh. It's horrifying when you actually see heartworms. Like,
poor pooches.
Yeah, it's terrifying.
Yeah.
The next thing we see with Eichhorst is when he's talking to Sean Astin. And
yeah, he's talking to Jim. So let's talk about Jim. He was largely absent last week. And now he's kind of trying to mop up his mess. He's a little freaked out that all these bodies have disappeared. So he calls his pal Greg, who had enlisted him in his illicit activities, and he goes right to Stoneheart looking for Greg. I don't know how he gets into that office if Greg's not there. I'm wondering if Greg even exists. Greg might not even be a person. We don't know that.
Greg wasn't the guy who was helping.
No, that's Gus.
That's Gus.
Gus. Yeah.
No, not Gus.
Wasn't Greg the old guy who?
No, the guy who's helping the old guy who's on the respirator.
Oh, maybe that's Greg. But in any case,
Butler man.
Eichhorst shows up and is like, "You will not be dealing with Greg anymore. You will be dealing with me, and I will give you the rest of the money that we shall pay you for your services, letting that cabinet."
You might as well have dangled it.
I see your wife did not get the cancer research she needs. It would be a shame if she was off the list.
Yeah, it would be. I have all this cancer research. It would be a shame if I dropped it.
I will just put it on the table and walk away.
Yeah.
You know, I think Sean Astin said today again at Comic-Con that he felt like this character was pretty close to himself in the sense that, like, he's playing a normal person, not a hobbit, but also that this character is motivated in their heart by good things, and then it's like you have these things put in front of you where, like, oh, I can save your wife. Oh, you can have this extra money.
Yeah.
It's like, what would a normal person do in this situation?
It's again with the greater good. Personally, people put their own good above the greater good, which they don't realize the scope of things.
Pushed to the breaking point.
My thoughts on this scene were, he can resist the one ring, but he can't resist the one German.
Oh, bro. And look, his wife is dying of cancer. What would you do? What would you do if you thought, if letting one piece of cargo off of an airport when you don't even know necessarily how bad the situation is?
I mean,
if it'll save your wife.
The way he played the wife card, I was like, damn.
The way he was told about it, it's they're letting one piece of medical
cargo
through. In his mind, that sounds like a black market heart.
Right, like a black market organ
or
something.
Which they're used to, because Stoneheart, he talks about, would you like us to harvest the organ? Remember, they talked about it last episode.
Yeah.
So he's probably used to doing that for Stoneheart.
Yeah, or anyone. I mean, and that's fairly, I mean, one person was harmed.
Yeah.
Essentially.
One.
Overseas. And he's like, okay, I'll let that slip through. He doesn't think. He couldn't possibly imagine
that it's a plane.
He's literally got Sean Astin's balls in a vice now, though. He says, you don't have one boss anymore. You have two bosses.
Your bosses at the CDC.
Does he have his balls in a jar?
Do you see them turning Sean at all? Do you see them turning Jim into a vampire?
Into a vampire? I don't know. I'm very, very cautious approaching this character. Because as of right now, he's not very interesting as played by Sean Astin, and I want it to be the best thing ever. And I know he's in a complicated situation. I feel like he's gotten himself into a pickle, and he's going to have to tell F and Nora eventually. And I think that when that happens, and when he has to, like, harden and become a vampire hunter like everybody else, then that's when he's going to get really cool. But, like, I feel like we're just getting broad strokes right now. I want to get into his head. I want to see that guilt pile up.
Yeah, I can't imagine they'd turn him
because
he's too useful to them as a regular CDC guy. Yeah.
But here's the question, right? They know so much about him. When he tells F and Nora, how is he going to keep that a secret from Eichhorst? How is he going to keep it a secret that he's betrayed the vampires?
Honestly, I don't know. Like, yeah, I don't know the answer to that. I'm sure he's going to basically stress the fact of, like, they can't find out I told you, by the way. And I think, I don't know how the vampires would find out anyway, because really, F and Nora have seen one now.
And also, I just want to say, I'm not knocking Sean Astin's performance. I'm just saying that I think his character, he's been given, like, the broad strokes of what his character's going through, and I really want a quieter moment to watch him act.
Well, he's only just started to have real drama to deal with, and you can sort of see in that battle scene, he's, like, really withdrawn. Like, he's really afraid. He's staying back because, in his heart, he knows
this
he's
is his fault. For this. Yeah, absolutely. And I think we're going to see that amplify over the course of the season. All right, we gotta. Does anyone have any more gym points? We gotta move on.
For iCursed, I'm just sad that I have not seen enough emotion to use the pun of "that's a sauerkraut."
Oh, jeez.
One more iCursed thing. He finds the Regis Airlines CEO and forces him to kill himself.
I was confused by that because I was wondering what his motivation was.
The motivation there was to make the story complete.
Yeah. The story will now end. People will stop paying attention because now there's no one to blame. He is so guilty that he shot himself. Right. So now people are going to be talking about that instead of the plane. Instead of the plane and what's wrong with the plane and was he lying, he obviously must not have been lying about it being, because a mechanical failure.
He made him lose his head, And I didn't even mean that as a pun. Sorry, guys. But no, they made him, appear as if he was suicidal due to him feeling
bad. Due to the strain that was put on him.
You guys.
How much money is in the pun jar this season?
We're not doing a pun jar on this show. okay. So, Nora gets it into her head that she wants to talk to Abraham. We're kind of getting out of sequence here. But Abraham is on trial. For trespassing, criminal trespassing, and screwing with a federal investigation, and I love this bit by Abraham by David Bradley where he's just playing dumb, he's playing the silly old man, and the judge buys it hook, line, and sinker, and he has to go that extra mile to get his sword cane, his sweet ass sword cane. But I love this whole bit. And then when he and Nora are outside, she's like, hey, things. Tell me about them. I want your help. You're only here because the bodies are gone. Yes, how do you know that? You're not ready. Oh, come on. No, you're not. When you're ready to go all the way, that's when you're useful to me. You're not useful.
Did you put it that way?
Yeah.
We know then by the end, because we were frustrated. You're watching this, and you're like, come on. She's basically begging you for your help, and you wanted to give it. But we know now by the end of the episode that it's set up like this because they see a vampire.
They need to see it
for
themselves. Yeah.
Well, you also hear him say, I need you to get me all the people, blah 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 blah, their social security, everything. Mm-hmm. And she's like, well, why? Tell me first. And that's why he's like, you're not ready.
Right.
Yeah.
And then the next scene we see with him is a girl bringing in everything he asked her for
in exchange for a PS4 without any of the cableage, so she won't be able to turn it on.
But PS PlayStations use the same cableage as their previous system, so you can just
That's exactly what I said.
Oh my gosh, you guys.
But he also didn't give her a charging cable for the controller.
I mean, but oh my god.
But
maybe he didn't have one.
Well, it's a pawn shop. Sorry, continue.
But he's Jewish and he's basically converting them over to the knowledge side, and then when you convert to Judaism you have to ask and be rejected 3 times.
Continue on that train of thought. Let's see how much water it holds.
Nora has to choose.
Yeah, you're right.
Matt's doing the Willy Wonka so phase.
Really? I imagine he's gonna take her in.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Oh my god! What the hell? Can I borrow your sword cane, please?
Yeah. I just wish that I could trade in social security numbers and get a PlayStation 4. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah, man. I want to see more of this young hacker girl.
I like her.
She's spunky.
She is spunky.
I imagine she's going away.
I don't know.
They didn't give her a name.
I like to think of her as Satrakian's spunky sidekick.
I love that. Yeah.
He's going to have this weird little army.
That's what we think Kispin's going to be.
Crispin. Here, we don't have a ton of time. He's going to go see he's going to the Arno house. It's his first stop. So who else visited the Arno house? F decided to go. They didn't really give a clear reasoning. There was no real, clear, I should go visit him. But he did.
I think because the last episode
he
got
called
that call.
Him. So he goes to the Arno house and there's mysteriously no one there and the door is open.
And there's hair in the tub.
Yeah. And there's hair in the pink water of the tub. Creepy.
Ooh, Pepto-Bismol.
And, Emma is hiding in the shadows and I'm like, oh my god, get out of there.
She looks so creepy.
So creepy. Mm-hmm.
She's balding.
The ring
hair's falling out.
Creepy.
Yeah.
But what is she doing waiting there?
There's a guy in there. There's blood
in there.
Maybe
she was full.
Yeah. Maybe she's weak, though, too. I mean, she's still a little girl. Like, you saw that they can bash in someone's head who's still, like, transforming. So she's still a little girl. The only reason she got her father so easily because he was right there.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, she probably can't take on a full-grown man human right now.
Yeah, it's true. In any case, F doesn't stay there for long. They're trying to figure out what's going on with Captain Redfern. They didn't tell Everett about it because Everett's still being a dick. You know, it's rough, man. The guy is dying. He's afraid. And he's got voices going through his head. He says he's here.
They are coming.
And he's here. And no one knows what he's talking about. And, you know, eventually... So F also, he's got his custody hearing with Zach. And Zach speaks from his heart. Like,
Bull.
Bull?
That was so coached. No child says... I think the best thing would be for my dad
He's
to see me.
He's super precocious.
He is. He has an iPad and a phone.
I don't think he was coached. I think it was just kind of how it is. But I think it's like the mom says to F right afterwards, like, "Well, you can see him whenever you want." It's like, well, then say that. Say it's
that's
a divorce.
But that's not what the kid said.
As long as you give me prior notice.
Yeah, that's
I wanted to.
I'm still frustrated because when we watch this, they still set her up as we know he's our hero.
Well, they keep giving us moments where Zach keeps looking at the mom.
Yeah.
Before he says what he says. So yeah. I understand why, like, I thought it was going to be coached, but then when I heard him speak, it felt very genuine.
Oh, I had the exact opposite reaction. I thought, well, first of all, my reaction to just the, I've never been through something like that.
Right.
But... to ask a kid his age, so I get interviewing him mm-hmm. to get his side of it, but to ask him directly, what do you think would be best for you?
Is really
with both
up.
His parents right there.
Yeah.
Is just it's the most messed up thing you could do to a kid.
Oh, absolutely,
I agree.
But at the same time, mom knows that F coached the kid. Mom knows that F coached the kids, so I have to imagine...
So she coached him back? That's
well, no,
not the
no,
right
no, no,
way
no, no, no. Here's what I imagine happened, and tell me I'm wrong. Feel free. He goes to mom, and he's like, you know, mom, dad said all this stuff to me, you know, and like, I don't know if I want that. I don't know if that makes sense, because like, he's saying that he wants to spend more time with me, but I don't know that that's what he would do. And she's like, well, son, that's what he wants. What do you want? Well, I just want dad to be happy. Maybe at that point, that's when mom says, well, he is so busy. Maybe you tell the judge this. And it is still manipulation, but I don't think she was like, listen up, this is what you need to say.
Okay.
I feel like it is more complicated than that, because later on in the episode, he goes downstairs and he finds her going over these photo albums, mourning a marriage that she wished could be saved.
I also don't like how I've said this so many times, but they're setting the job up as the enemy. So it's like the job is what's taking all the time and everything. And we're going to learn in future episodes that this job is worth all this time because he's going to save all these people. So it's like they set
him up.
And
that's not a spoiler, people. We know that that's going to happen because this is an action show.
Right, right. Yeah. Well, so we're setting up this big, like, job as the big bad, but then the job comes in for, like, he becomes very important in it. So it's almost like you set her up to look like a villain by being anti his job when we know his job is very important.
Mm.
And that's what's frustrating to me, is because there's almost no way we're going to see this character from an angle where we're like, oh, she's very reasonable.
And they could have, like, I agree with Matt, the way you said that it happened. That makes sense to me. But the way that we're presented with it, when she tries to defend what happened,
mm-hmm.
is she doesn't bring that up. She doesn't say, he came to me and told me what you said. He's worried about you.
Right.
She comes in and she's like, well, you can see him. You just have to let me know and give me a heads up, and then it'll be okay. And, like, also, but, like, they keep setting her up to be the bad guy. Because, like, why would she bring her new boyfriend to a custody hearing?
Her new boyfriend, who Zach friggin' likes, man.
He should... if she's trying to help F deal
with this... Zach likes everybody.
But if she's trying to help F deal with this, you don't bring the guy you're banging now to the custody hearing.
Especially if he works at Sears.
And then you're like, F standing... You can see F... You can see F standing down the hallway watching them, and they're, like, embracing, and he's, like, talking to Zach.
But
like,
that's the thing. Okay. Zach doesn't go to Dad and give him a hug. He goes to Matt and gives him a hug, okay? Because whatever F tries to pull or tries to say about their relationship, this is the moment where he realizes he and his kid are not as close as he thinks they are because he's not been there. I'm sorry. Look, yeah, he's busy, and yeah, he wishes that he was there more for his kid, but he has not been. So you can't tell me that she is entirely a villain for doing what she thinks is
you're
right
okay,
for
Matt?
The kid. No,
you're
I'm okay. not okay.
Okay, yeah. But she brings okay? up it's in the same like breath, basically. She brings up like You're gonna not be able to see him. You're gonna have to let me know anytime you want to. And says it's the little things, just being there for all the little things. That's what matters. Mm-hmm. So you've just taken away his ability to be there for the little things and told him that's what he needs to do to get closer to Zach.
All right. Well, yeah. it's a complex issue.
I think there's a better way they could have painted it.
I agree.
So that she would come
I will
off
say
a little
this.
Better,
I think
right
that
now,
these the relationship, the parenting scenes are not the strongest scenes in this show and
no.
could be handled with a little more finesse. Let's say that.
I just think Ephraim may work a lot, but it's really awkward to walk in on your mom like crying over your pictures.
It's true. Okay. So, we've got missing Redfern. Everyone's trying to find him. They're on conference call all over the hospital. And Jim finds him sucking down a bunch of blood in the basement kitchen because that's where you put a kitchen and that's where you put blood, apparently.
Yeah, that's where you keep, what the?
I don't understand.
I mean, maybe he just thought it was a kitchen.
I think that's what it was because he was eating.
They plan ahead, okay, Zach? They plan ahead.
It was the morgue. I think it was the morgue or blood storage.
But there was a kitchen tray behind him.
It was a kitchen.
So, Nora shows up just as Jim is about to be attacked by Redfern, who's now gone full Nosferatu, and she tries to save him. She's hitting him with this coat rack, and then as soon as he's down, she drops the coat rack like an idiot, because of course he's gonna come back up again. And F just starts whacking him with this fire extinguisher, and he smashes his skull in. But here's a question. Did he smash it in far enough? Because I'm like imagining a Who Framed Roger Rabbit sticking a thumb in his mouth and just blowing the skull back out.
It did look kind of comical. It looked like a plastic doll they just pushed in.
Yeah.
But F like got a few dodges in. It was like, wah! Wah!
Yeah, but it was like,
it was like
so,
some Matrix.
It was so TV though, because it's like... It's like, you can think about it like from a directing standpoint. Shot is like, okay, on you, and then when I pan over, you go this way, and then I'm gonna be back on it, and then you go this way. It was just like, it was very
But it shows us a lot about the vampires themselves as opposed to the master, though. Because when the master has his tongue, you can see that it moves on its own, he can move it. These guys apparently can only projectile shoot it as opposed to. Have it like out and moving around.
Well,
to get people.
It's still young.
Yeah, it's a new muscle that they've never used before.
Used your vampire tongue muscle.
I try to flex it, but I'm still working on it.
Sure.
It's the first time he's ever used it, so he's not going to know. I guess I'm assuming that they are intelligent in some way and have more than just instincts.
Yeah.
So they'll get better.
Interesting.
So now, give them time.
That's about the time I feel like they realize something's not really, you know, right.
Yeah. Yeah, maybe just now. And I'm happy that it's happening now and not later in the season.
This would have been the opportune time to drop an F-bomb. Like,
yeah.
What was that?
It was really, really cool.
It was really cool. The effects in that scene were cool.
You're welcome.
Appreciate it, Matt.
Yeah, I agree. All right, I think it's time for predictions.
No, wait,
Vasily Fett.
Yeah.
And the rats.
Oh, Vasily. We're running so low on time.
We can go for 8 more
minutes. But Vasily is probably my favorite character because he's just
mine's
so...
Mine's Gus.
He's so cool.
Oh, and Satrakian.
Yeah, he's so cool and he's so nice and the girl who he works with has a crush on him and why wouldn't she? Because he's dark and handsome and dramatic.
And Russian.
And he's suddenly, he's got all these rat cases. What's going on with these rats? They're all getting all crazy. And the mayor wants him to look in on this high rise because the guy's a campaign contributor. And the guy in question is played by the guy who plays Daniel on Orphan Black, so that was cool. And he, the rat bit his daughter in the face. And Vasily's so good with the little girl, and he very calmly explains why it happens. And he tracks the rat down, he captures him, and then he, like, gives the rat to the dude because he's a dick, and then he kind of, he tries to coax him into giving him a cigar, and the dude doesn't do it. I'm like, dick.
You know, I love how he's playing this character, though, because the way he, like, says his words, he makes sure his front teeth are showing. It's a very rodent-like feature as he says the words, and it's kind of like, this is the rat guy. I like it.
He's the rat guy. He's the rat guy.
Another interesting thing about this, like, do you think that the rats can contract the disease and spread it?
I'm very curious. I don't know what the rat connection is. I feel like they're afraid. I feel like they sense that something's wrong.
They're being driven out of where they normally are.
And yes, we know that. They're leaving the sewer as we
So he's probably going to investigate the sewer.
That's a lot of rats, man. It's a lot of rats. And Vasily is like, what's up? What's with these rats? They're all perturbed. They're all in a lather about something. We're going to have a huge rat problem on our hands. They're all going to be in the streets.
We're Russians. We know how rats think, and this is not rat normally.
We're rushing into things.
All right.
Okay, so.
All right, time for predictions.
Well done.
Yes.
And now, your AfterBuzz TV predictions.
All right, folks. What are we thinking? What's happening? Also, if you do not like it when people talk about the scenes from next week, maybe skip a minute ahead, because we're just going to talk about them real quick, and then everything we say will be without context, because you won't have heard what we said. So what's going to happen next week? It looks like they're going to, you know, go to Abraham. It looks like Abraham's going to fight Emma and kill her, because he's awesome, and he kills little girls.
They're going to have that classic monster debate, like any zombie vampire, where you have to cross that line of like, you have to kill a human, or what was a human, is it still a human, is it not, and you have that moral debate.
Yeah, right. That's the part where shite gets real.
Mm-hmm.
I think we see Nikolai chained up, it looked like, because it looked like Anne-Marie had him chained up to something, because it shows her in like a shed.
Well, that could be the scene that he was talking about that was his favorite scene to shoot.
Maybe. I don't know. Like, his relationship's kind of interesting. I think we're going to see... I think the one who's going to take on the role of, like, turning a lot of people and infecting a lot of people is going to be...
Gabe?
Is that Bolinar?
Yeah, Bolivar. Gabriel Bolivar.
Gabriel Bolivar. I think he's going to be the first one to start really actively hunting people.
Yeah, and spreading it around the world. He's on tour, man.
I know, right? It's crazy.
The No Penis Tour.
Mm-hmm.
The No Penis Tour.
Yeah, the No Dick Tour 2015. I love it.
I really hope we get, like, a Gene Simmons, like, cameo on this show. Just from, like, the whole tongue thing and the rocker thing. I would love that.
Yeah. Zach?
I mean, I think we're going to see a lot of struggle with Satrakian versus
Emma versus Eichhorst versus the Master,
just like versus Nora. Steven? Nora,
yeah.
I think they're gonna headbutt a lot. As like he tells her what needs to be done, and she's gonna resist.
Okay, I like that. I honestly think he's gonna have that conflict with the whole team, because they're gonna turn to him next week, and he's gonna be like, "You're still not ready," and they're gonna be like, "But
here,
have a
PlayStation."
Yeah. But we got attacked, and he's like, "Here, have PlayStation."
I think F's gonna
sale. Get your PlayStations. Only 3 social security numbers to get 1 PlayStation.
Yeah.
No charge cables including.
That's over sale.
Yeah, it's over sale. Right? Yeah. In any case, yeah, I think I want to see them get active and start to get ready to fight back next week.
I worry Nora's going to be the one to get infected, because I think it's going to be Efren she's going to be the one who realizes what she has to do. And right as she does that, Efren's going to be so, no, like, I can't do this. And then she's going to be infected, and he's like, damn it, I have to do it.
Oh, I think F is going to, I think he's going to bite and go for the kill. Nice. He's going to dive right in.
Yeah, I'm into it, man. I'm very excited that they're active.
I think if anyone gets infected, and it's Matt, not you, Matt, but boyfriend Matt, I think F's going to want to kill him. And his son's going to see him kill him.
Don't look at my face, guys. Yeah. There was a comment about this. I'm not making any facial expressions.
Does Efren kill Matt in front of Zach?
Oh my God, you guys.
Can we, like, this is it's kind of now
very weird. Listen to us on iTunes if my face bothers you, but I'm not making any
and
facial
follow us on Twitter because we have to wrap up the
all
show.
All right,
now.
Yeah. So thank you, folks. Thank you for joining us this week. The folks are going to be back next week with an all new show. Unfortunately, I will not be here.
Wah, wah.
Everyone's going to do an amazing show. It's going to be really, really great. Steve and Lemieux, where can the people find you?
You can find me on Twitter at StLemieux. It's StephenLemieux, and doing the MasterChef After Show here at AfterBuzz TV, as well as Graceland on Wednesdays.
All right, and Zach?
You guys catch me on Twitter at ThatZachWilson, and also here at AfterBuzz. Coming up next, I'm going to be going right into The Leftovers. I've got Dominion. We're going to be doing two episodes this week to catch up.
Nice.
MasterChef with Stephen Lemieux.
Woo. All right, and Jackie?
I do the Under the Dome After Show on Tuesdays with Matt Lieberman, and I'm at 123Jackie_B.
Okay, and you can find me on Twitter at Matt Lieberman, MattLieberman. You can find all my videos for SourceFed and SourceFed Nerd on YouTube, and you can find me on Under the Dome with Jackie, Halt and Catch Fire, Ray Donovan, Marin, and Defiance. Oh, and Ruby on Thursdays. If you're a fan of the Rooster Teeth show, Ruby, we're doing a recap bi-weekly, so go watch that. Thank you very much. Good night.
From executive producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire AfterBuzz TV staff, we would like to thank you for listening to the AfterBuzz TV network. To watch or listen to other after shows and post comments or questions, be sure to visit AfterBuzzTV.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of AfterBuzz TV.
Bye. See you later.
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of AfterBuzz TV or its owners or principals.